bilateral con Venezuela para afectar el funcionamiento bilateral. Ya rompimos relaciones con Estados Unidos en el punto de vista bilateral, no acá. Si lo hacen es trampa, es truco, arbitrariedad y es abuso de poder. Todo eso tenemos que desmantelarlo, eliminar la niebla de la mentira de los ojos de la mayoría del pueblo y de la opinión pública internacional. Ese es el primer punto. Quieren reconocer a quien quieran reconocer, es una facultad soberana de cada Estado. Cada Estado puede reconocer a quien le parezca, eso no nos metemos nosotros. Pero lo que sí es cierto es que para sacarnos de aquí se necesita cumplir con la carta y no hacer estafas. Primer punto, señor presidente. Vamos ahora al centro de todo lo demás. Señor presidente, una ola de autoproclamaciones recorre el hemisferio. En Venezuela, un diputado se para en una plaza y se autoproclama en un presidente. En Miami, unos turistas se reúnen en un restaurante y se autoproclaman el Tribunal Supremo de Venezuela. Acá en esta sala, el secretario general se autoproclama jefe de la OEA y empieza a desconocer estados y a dar órdenes sin tener autoridad para ello. No la tiene, es falso, está mintiendo. Y empieza a tomar órdenes en nombre de los estados. Él no es el jefe de la OEA. Él habla como si fuera el presidente de los estados. Eso no funciona así. Por favor, entiendan cuál es la función de ese señor acá. Igual cuando llama a la guerra, viola todo lo que está haciendo acá. En la misma OEA, un empleado de los órganos de propaganda de Washington se autoproclama embajador de Venezuela sin que nadie comprenda cómo pudo hacer eso y cómo puede ocupar este puesto. Por eso no está sentado acá. Por eso no está sentado acá. Porque se autoproclamó, para mayor confusión, un senador estadounidense se autoproclama jefe de nuestra Fuerza Armada Nacional Bolivariana y amenaza a nuestros oficiales en Venezuela. Un asesor de la Casa Blanca, señor presidente, se autoproclama el dueño de nuestro petróleo y roba al pueblo venezolano más de 30 mil millones de dólares en apenas hace una semana. Eso estoy hablando en 100 años. En una semana se robaron 30 mil millones de dólares del pueblo venezolano, hace apenas una semana. Mientras todos nosotros estábamos discutiendo cuál era el artículo de la Constitución que mejor aplicaba y cómo es que se interpretaba, mientras nos pusieron en una discusión de leguleya, se robaron 30 mil millones de dólares. Y, para no hacer la lista más larga, el señor Trump, jefe máximo de los anteriores autoproclamados, también se autoproclama dueño y señor de los recursos naturales y territorios y pobladores de esa colonia que él llama ahora Venezuela. Tenemos una verdadera epidemia de autoproclamaciones. Señor presidente, ¿qué está pasando? ¿Cómo explicar esta pesadilla? Vamos por partes. El autoproclamado en Venezuela aprobó al gobierno de los Estados Unidos el despojo de propiedades de nuestro pueblo por decenas de miles de millones de dólares. Aceptó que un senador de Florida designara primero que nadie a un empleado de las compañías petroleras de Estados Unidos como el embajador venezolano en este país. Afirmó que estaba dispuesto a autorizar a tropas de Estados Unidos a invadir a Venezuela, y hasta tuvo que venir un congresista de los Estados Unidos para recordarle que las intervenciones militares de Estados Unidos solo pueden ser autorizadas por el Congreso de Estados Unidos. Para no hacer la lista muy larga, el autoproclamado también defiende las medidas de asfixia económica contra nuestro pueblo, porque producen el sufrimiento necesario para que los militares venezolanos decidan apoyarlo a él en el poder. Señor presidente, el golpe de Estado es victorioso en Washington, donde todos celebran el saqueo de nuestra nación, pero es un fracaso en Venezuela, donde hasta para dormir el líder necesita la protección de las embajadas de gobiernos extranjeros.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos. Thank you.
gentlemen, coming your way, it's the February 21st, 2019 edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Thursday, about 6 o'clock as you listen to this, or maybe, well, would have been if you had. This is a broadcast which is going to cover a lot of the last, what's called Conscience in Action and HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, meetings yesterday. They kind of got merged into each other. We discussed an upcoming the Ross Camp situation. That's the campground out in the outskirts of Santa Cruz where homeless folks are largely providing their own shelter, and the city council is currently threatening to displace them, although that could be in for a change on the next coming Tuesday city council, depending on what the four people in the city council or the majority votes. And there's also a planned workshop, I guess the word is, coming up the day after out at the Ross Camp to by an attorney who's with the Poor People's Campaign. He's with the statewide Union of the Homeless, and he also has been helping activist Wes White in Salinas defend homeless folks against the kind of get the fuck out of town or we will put you in jail police practices that are unfortunately the case all over the country and in Santa Cruz as well. And the idea is to train people in how to deal with these issues, particularly in the light of recent court decisions still currently valid that essentially supposedly protect homeless people, the Martin v. Boise decision from Idaho of last September. So we'll be going into that, plus some interviews and, who knows, mostly bits and pieces, but hopefully stuff that you'll find tasty. Stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with, a flyer I just got. I'm recording the show on Thursday afternoon for playing on Thursday evening. Free legal workshop for those without housing. And that's coming up next Wednesday on the, looks like the 27th at 2 o'clock out at the Ross Camp, assuming the weather holds. And as of today, it looks like rain throughout the day Monday and light rain Tuesday, but just cloudy on Wednesday. That would be Wednesday the 28th. So, no, 27th, sorry. But that would be good for folks who want to take lessons in the under the clouds out at the Ross Camp from an attorney who and those who want to help him to advise people on how to prepare for a lawsuit to challenge Santa Cruz's anti-homeless laws and anti-homeless police practices and attempt to deport, evict, disperse campers from the only areas they have, given the fact that there's utterly inadequate shelter in Santa Cruz. So that's coming up 2 o'clock next Wednesday out at the Ross Camp, assuming all goes well. And I'll be reaffirming this on Sunday in my longer broadcast. And there's also a flyer coming out. If you go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, or check Facebook, particularly Food Not Bombs Facebook, you'll find a flyer describing this, as well as the previous day at the city council on the February 26th, when there is presumably items on homelessness coming up for a declaration of a homeless emergency, RV parking, There's supposed to be other stuff, too, although a recent conversation with activist Drew Glover, who presented these things at the last council meeting, some of them, is that some of these are going to be delayed, but some are going forward, and we don't yet know, as of the time of this recording, when exactly the City Council is going to be considering these issues on Tuesday, whether it's Tuesday afternoon or Tuesday evening, but on Sunday, presumably, that will be better known. So to get some idea of how this idea for a law clinic, sort of on-the-spot law training, or, you know, protection, if you can, if there is any protection, it's kind of hard to say, from really well-armed and well-organized and well-funded police departments, such as Santa Cruz has, and supported by NIMBYs in the neighborhood and vigilantes who are also in the neighborhood or in other neighborhoods nearby, how homeless folks can defend themselves against this kind of stuff. Well, it really, I think, depends a lot on the conscience of the rest of the people in the Santa Cruz community. And that really is something I've always appealed to and spoken to, as well as the organizing efforts and the solidarity of folks outside themselves, which is always important, too. You can always, you know, ask for compassion from the community and tolerance from the conservatives and empathy from the liberals, but ultimately it may boil down to forming common interests with people who really are ultimately facing the same fate you are. Poor students, elderly people, renters who are getting ousted from Santa Cruz, disabled folks who are facing huge medical bills and or just flat cost of rising cost of living and flat government appropriations for their disabilities, veterans who are getting screwed over, having been turned into the country's favorite murderers. They then have to deal with being treated like throwaway garbage. It's amazing. In any case, people have to band together to assert their own interests and their own rights, but they also can appeal to the common conscience. Some of which is a mythology, I think, and that's always the tricky part. People think they're, you know, caring about humanitarian activity abroad and want to see world peace and all this kind of stuff. But when it comes down to overthrowing the local government in order to create that, or standing up for people who are risking jail to get the news out, like Julian Assange, Chelsea Manning, Edward Snowden, it's no longer fashionable, particularly if your favorite Democratic Party hack candidate is getting defeated because she spent too much money crushing the so-called progressives in her party. You know, like that happened with Sanders and Clinton in 2016, and seems to be happening again. You get a lot of talk about not really single payer, but sort of close to single payer, maybe. You know, although there's a lot of backlash against the attempt to get single payer or even publicly funded health care of a meaningful sort independently of the insurance companies at a state level from a lot of Democratic Party old-liners and old-timers, hard-liners, whatever you want to call them, you know, the establishment group that wants to maintain power and control, and it's funded by the same corporate money bags as the Republicans, or maybe a somewhat different money bags, but the money bags nonetheless. And of course, the arms manufacturers and all the folks who want to keep the Cold War going, and the Democrats who want to keep blaming their problems on Russia, you know, that sort of thing. So, to jump back to actually what I began to talk about, we're going to leap into the Conscience and Action meeting, where we had a visitor who came to the meeting, Anthony Prince, who, as I mentioned before, is an attorney who's been working with various homeless activists throughout the state, and is very passionate about the need to not rely on the courts, not rely on legal tricks, but, you know, to use them as part of a broader strategy to educate the community, empower homeless people, get homeless people and other groups to recognize their common interests and then join together, and then together they may actually have some power to fight back. Anyway, we're going to kind of jump into that. The sound quality varies widely. This was a meeting held in the Bagelry, a lot of noise, but you can hear some of the main people, mainly me and whoever I was talking to, because I kind of ran the meeting. And hopefully you'll learn something from it. We did get something out of it. We got a proposed and upcoming legal forum or legal training session or workshop, whatever you want to call it, or at least that's what we're promised for 2 o'clock Wednesday, the 27th, next week. So the conversation began, the initial part of it I didn't record, but the part of it we were were discussing immediately before this recording was the visit of Chief of Police Andy Mills out to the campground. And actually, maybe the best thing for me to do is to play a little interview about that, according to one of the camp residents who had a rather a critical view of what Mills said. Now, I believe there's a different perspective that Conscience in Action Phil Postner had when he talked to Chief Andy Mills, or wrote him, and discussed whether Mills had said and done the things that he was accused of doing. I think I'll play that first, because it's really, it sets the tone and the concern for what's going on. I've mentioned this on Sunday, I believe, at my prior show. There are already postings out there that people have to be gone by mid-March, that they will not, that they have to find services or go elsewhere. And the police have been out there, sometimes heavily armed, sometimes less so. Generally, I was told by people living out there in the occasional visits I've had, not harassing people, but occasionally looking for people with warrants, it's true, but not providing the kind of intense scrutiny and surveillance and kind of pressuring that the Parks and Rec did over at the San Lorenzo campground a year ago. This is a much larger campground, and also it was created more, both campgrounds were created by homeless people, not by the city, and then the city said, well, you're over there, go over there instead, don't hang out around the post office, don't hang out around City Hall, don't hang out downtown, don't hang out in the neighborhoods, get over there, you know. No, you can't hang out on the beach, we know what the boardwalk doesn't like it. No, get away from the Depot Park. These kinds of admonitions from police agencies and Parks and Rec rangers created the swollen Ross Street, Ross area campground, the Ross encampment. And that's where we're sitting now. And the city council, about 2 weeks ago, or actually about a week ago, ruled the campground had to be closed, but it was all going to be done in a wonderful way because everyone's going to get services, or many were, and it was all working, going to work out fine. There was a lot of skepticism from at least a minority on the city council, and there was concern that Justin Cummings seemed to be saying that he was buying this bullshit, which is how I regard it, these promises by Susie O'Hara, Tina Scholl, and city manager Martine Bernal, that they're going to have more beds and more services, and they're going to reopen the River Street to Boneyard Barbed Wire Campground, and they're going to have, you know, the 7th Avenue Campground, I should say, shelter open, and the Laurel Street shelter open. So in other words, there's no real problem. But in fact, of course, a large number of people are going to be displaced, and they're going to be displaced into the neighborhoods. It's a ridiculous solution, and they've been making promises, these city bureaucrats, O'Hara, Scholl, and Bernal, for 3 years on these issues, and making claims about what they're going to do regarding RV parks and additional navigation centers, and none of it has come to fruition. Or very limited sort of makeshift interim solutions have come, of rather costly solutions. The $75,000 to $90,000 per month Boneyard campground is an example of that. And so that's there's a lot of skepticism about that. And there is a late letter from Justin Cummings, which I'm going to read too. I think I'll read that letter right now. To essentially, it's a reassuring letter. I don't know how much to be reassured. I'm hoping it's something that I should be reassured on. The real question is, A, will Cummings continue to walk that walk? And B, if he does, even if there are four council members walking the walk, will they be able to stop the city manager and the police department from doing whatever the fuck they want? As seems to be what they've done in the past. when Micah Posner and, of all people, Pamela Comstock tried to open two 24-hour actual bathrooms in the city. I don't mean porta-potties. I don't mean disabled porta-potties. I don't mean outhouses. I mean bathrooms. They were first blocked and stalled by the city council. And then when Comstock insisted, because she understood, I think, that if you're going to run homeless people out of town, you don't want those that remain shitting all over the place. And it makes only common sense to have some bathrooms open at night. They kept one bathroom open for 6 months. When a homeless woman kept sleeping in the bathroom, they used that as a pretext to close it, just as they've used the pretext of very limited vandalism problems at Loudoun Nelson and City Hall to close those bathrooms. But really, of course, the point being to drive away homeless people who were, A, at Loudoun Nelson, had moved there when the San Lorenzo campground closed in February of last year, or was closed by the city, with its bathrooms closed all year until that time, and even after that time, until activists forced them open with protests and impassioned appeals to the city manager. And at City Hall, of course, the bathrooms were closed to shut out the freedom sleepers and the survival sleepers who stayed there at City Hall protesting the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban and its anti-homeless laws and practices that were, in essence, an expansion of or a substitution for the city's sleeping and camping ordinances. So what I'm going to play for you now is a conversation I had with Alicia Kuhl, who is an RV activist who has been fighting to be able to park her RV for during the 72-hour permitted period without being harassed and constantly put on the defensive by Lieutenant Joe Habey, who comes around in the wee hours or in the early morning hours with citations or threats of citation. And apparently that happened recently as well as little as 2 days ago. And it's a real problem. People whose homes or their vehicles need a place to sleep and park, and they don't have it, and they're being run out of the neighborhood with the police enabling vigilante and bigoted neighbors to do this. Or at least that's how it certainly seems to those in vehicles who are being told to move long before or significantly before the 72-hour move along is up. And they also tend to move along during the 72-hour period, and so they're not violating that law. In other words, if you're parked somewhere and then you go somewhere else for a day and then you come back to that place, you've abandoned the area and returned, and there's a new 72-hour period of allowed parking begins. The police apparently in some respects, and the neighbors in some respects, are not respecting this. So, anyway, Alicia has also been concerned about the Ross campground. She's gone out there with another activist from down south to poll the people, find out what they want, provide food and water for them. I think they provided some burgers a couple weeks ago. I played some of the comments by those folks in one of my prior shows. This was right before last Tuesday's city council meeting. And here's her phone call from the Ross camp about the issue of Chief Mills' statements to the camp, according to one of the camp residents, Shannon, who was later quoted in the Santa Cruz Sentinel at length. And not the best story, but not the worst either.
Shannon is here and would like to give you a statement. I'm sure the police chief was here the day before yesterday and gave everybody quite a nice little speech about how they can't stay here and that any funds that are allocated are going to be make sure that this never happens again and that, they can stay places, but they cannot stay here.
Did he say where they could stay?
She gave me a recording. I'll let you talk to her then. Do you want to talk to her?
Sure, put her on.
Hang on. Hello?
Hi, who's this?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, who is this?
My name is Shannon.
Hey, Shannon.
Also known as Mama Shannon out here.
Oh, it's Robert Shannon. How are you doing?
Hi, Robert. Long time no talk to you.
Yeah, what's cooking?
So he basically said that we could, if you were from another area, he got specific, like Live Oak, Aptos, etc., to go home. The
that if you're from Colorado or you're from Michigan, that you can get a ticket home, that you are free to roam the United States, but you are not free to do it here. And what funding was given by the feds that would not be put into making sure there were beds available would be put into making sure that another unauthorized encampment never formed in the city of Santa Cruz.
Huh. When did you have this conversation with Chief Mills?
He did a speech in front of a few people, and he made the statement, those of you who aren't here, and we know who those are the tent hiders. Those are the ones committing the crimes and doing the drugs, the ones that don't have the, that have warrants and aren't brave enough to be here this morning. And he made the speech to all of us.
About what time did he show up?
In the morning, I don't know, like 9 or 10.
And what day was that?
That was Thursday morning.
And how many folks?
He said that HPHP and other places would be here to help us get housing and to avail yourself of these services. But they never actually came into the camp or set up here. There was never an announcement made. One person from each organization stood on the walkway from Ross to the camp and talked to people as they passed by.
And how many people would you say were listening to Mills' speech?
Probably about 15 or 20. And I think the most interesting part was that one of the officers walked by and asked where the chief of police was. And when somebody said, I don't know, and the officer said, he didn't come down this way. And they said, no, we haven't seen the chief down here. He goes, well, that's interesting. The man gives a speech telling you all have to leave, but doesn't bother to come down here and talk to anybody. I always knew he was a prick.
So where did he give his speech from anyway?
Standing up by the outhouses, sort of, you know, between the outhouses and where they have the Sharps container.
Have they moved?
Right on the dead end of the levee.
And have they moved the porta potties?
No.
Okay. And how many are there?
At this time, I believe there's 8 or 10.
And the reason I mentioned that is that there was some concerns by tannery residents who wanted the porta potties moved more deeply into the camp, wanted additional barriers set up. They had some other concerns. Of course, Ross, as folks know, set up a fence all the way around the campground. There is you can approach it through the pedestrian bridge, or sometimes through the sort of a gate that swings open if someone's there to open it near Ross. But as you heard on Sunday, Dan McGuire, who was providing pallets, was prevented, not prevented, well, he was told he would be trespassing if he continued to provide pallets by parking in the Ross parking lot, the parking lot actually for that whole complex. It isn't owned by Ross. It's owned by, I guess, a collection of different businesses there. And they're required to allow some kind of public access, particularly if it's a free speech issue. That's the so-called... if I can just remember the name of that, Pruneyard decision, that's what it was called, which said that if you're in a shopping center, they can't drive you away if you want to give away flyers or literature or petition. And presumably, you know, you're coming through to provide some humanitarian aid to someone nearby. And I don't know, that may be an exception. In any case, there has been some hostility and some attempts to interfere with charity efforts for people in the Ross campground. It's sort of this part of this general attempt, which we've seen by the city council and by, in the past 5 or 6 years, and by the staff in the past 20 or 30 years, staff of the city council, including the police and the Parks and Rec Rangers and the library staff and Downtown Association connected folks, and parking enforcement folks, and so forth, to make Santa Cruz an unwelcome community to poor people. So I'm trying to get some updates from Shannon, the woman who is talking. Haven't been able to so far. I'm having trouble getting back in connection with her. And Alicia, who reports from what she said, didn't actually hear Mills speak. I'm going to interrupt this this recording by playing what Mills wrote to activist Phil Posner. Okay, well, I'm on the line now with activist Phil Posner, who's on the streets with his literature works, but he's also a man who was at the Huff and Conscience in Action meeting yesterday, and he has been in correspondence with Chief Mills. Hi, Phil. And you brought to the Conscience in Action meeting a response from Andy Mills about essentially it was a response, I think, to the story in the Sentinel, which to some extent describes what Shannon, the Ross Camp activist or resident out there, had said, that Mills had told people that they're going to have to leave and, you know, they were providing bus tickets for some. And but I've just played that. You remember what she said. But you, what did Chief Mills write to you?
Well, Robert, as you know, I admire you for your passion for the homeless, and you make a big difference to our society. But sometimes we disagree in terms of the issues of how we approach people. So when I saw the email from, what was the lady's name?
Shannon.
Describing the chief's behavior, I thought that we should ask the chief if that was true. So I basically wrote him and said, is this a true description of what you did? And he wrote back and basically said, you know, yes, I was there, and I did tell people that they're going to have to leave by March 15th, but he also said, I told them that the issue, again, I don't have the letter in front of me, so the email, but I also told them that the issue was coming before the council, and so not anything is going to happen until at least the next meeting, and then maybe by the 15th, and that he also said that people will have to leave eventually.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty much how I understood it.
And I guess what you...
Which was, as I just said to you, it wasn't that different from the way you read it. I just think he was... I think I read that he was a little bit more polite.
Yeah, I mean, I think the issue is the substantial message there, not so much whether it's conveyed in polite language or not. The question is whether he's saying, get the fuck out of town if you don't live here. You know, we're going to give you bus tickets. Don't come back and don't try to set up an alternate encampment. And I guess I didn't see him saying, when you showed me, I don't remember in the letter you showed us his saying that, but I don't remember his denying that either. So, you still there, Phil? I'm afraid we lost him, but I'm afraid that at least that gives us some sense of it. And that's, I think I'm going to leave it there and play some more of this interview with the Ross Camp resident, Shannon. After a brief musical break, of course.
Thank you very much.
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. I will begin with my most important question. Did you see the Grammys, and if so, what did you think of Jennifer Lopez's performance?
Who?
J-Lo.
I don't know her.
Thank you. And now my follow-up. Will you, in fact, declare a national emergency at the southern border?
I'll sign the final papers as soon as I get into the Oval Office, and we will have a national emergency, and we will then be sued, and they will sue us in the Ninth Circuit, even though it shouldn't be there. And we will possibly get a bad ruling, and then we'll get another bad ruling, and then we'll end up in the Supreme Court.
I love this song.
And hopefully we'll get a fair shake, and we'll win in the Supreme Court. Just like the ban, they sued us in the Ninth Circuit, and we lost, and then we lost in the appellate division.
Sweetie.
And then we won.
Some say that you're just concocting this crisis to get the money for your wall. Well, I mean, it was a wall, and then it was a fence. What's it today? Some chicken wire and an ADT security decal?
No.
A couple of Doberman pinchers and a sprinkler? Thank you.
You're fake news.
Some say that you're just fear-mongering and using inflated statistics to help your own agenda.
Not too many people have said that.
Some say that you're full of shit and others will agree. That you're just fomenting fear and hate with your hyperbole.
Drugs and gangs and people, it's an invasion.
Now push has come to shove, you shut down the gov. just to try and get your way.
I didn't need to do this.
Your only interest is to can't make promises. Can we believe a word you say?
No.
Girl, you're at an impasse. Now they're gonna do your ass, but you just keep pushing me.
You don't have a border, you don't have a country.
Border lies, freaking us out while you traumatize. All the stats you claim you've been shown.
You told us that Mexico would reimburse us for the wall. Is it true that you will allow them to pay entirely with 20% off coupons from Bed Bath & Beyond?
Where the hell did that come from?
I have my sources. My mom posted it on Facebook.
Well, he's quick to rush to racist, rash decisions on a whim.
I could do the wall over a longer period of time. I didn't need to do this.
But the only national emergency we have is him.
And by the way, Trump is crazy.
He dupes and he deceives, but still his base believes the MAGA mantras he repeats.
Make America great again.
He said that Mexico would pay for it if so. And I'd sure like to see your receipts.
No.
Girl.
Hit that Adderall.
Take a sip.
Go get your border wall. And stop being such a
getting it done.
Border lies. Even Ann Coulter is getting wise. You're just walking like a parrot, echoing border lies.
Border lies.
Let's just hope your face doesn't recognize. You're just dangling a carrot. Rest up in border.
Sorry. Guess I got a little carried away.
Let's not talk about it.
Okay. It's too bad Mike Pence is in here. He loves Madonna.
I don't know her.
And that was the latest from Randy Rainbow, Border Lies, another parody. A lot of fun. You can find the video online, except for the knee-jerk follow along with the Democratic Party hacks, Russiagate nonsense. It's my kind of song and my kind of parody. I don't quite know what it's a parody of, but, well, now back to Ross Kemp and an interview with Shannon, a resident there.
Huh? And how often are they cleaned?
They were cleaned daily, but I don't think the cleaning crews have been out since the speech.
And that was on Thursday, huh?
Yeah.
How is the camp bearing the weather?
We're bearing it pretty well, and I would have to say, Robert, for all the years that I've been doing this, and you know I've been entrenched in this for a long time, this has probably got to be the cleanest camp I've seen, like even better than Occupy.
Uh-huh. What was the first camp you were in, Shannon? How long ago?
Here in Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
River Street Refugees.
So it was
1996.
And how did, were you there in 95 before the River Street Refugees?
No, I was only there after the actual back 40 got shut down and they were going from campground to campground. That's when I joined in.
I gotcha. How much is
when
the...
When we first met, when you gave me the moniker of Shit Kicker Shannon.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You were writing. And are you writing poetry these days?
Yes, I am.
Good. We'll have to have you doing some regular contributions on the air, kiddo.
I have a short story in prose called Irony about what happened with Shannon at Camouflage and how it is ironic that a organization that was started over the outrage of a murder of a woman now commits violence against homeless women.
All right. That was what? Yeah, some years ago.
Yeah, and it's still happening. I mean, we're still getting frozen water bottles thrown at us and various other things going on.
I'm recording this. Is that okay with you?
That's fine with me. You know that.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
How long have you been at the Ross encampment, and what do you call it?
I've been calling it the encampment, just because, as we know, when you're not authorized, when it's sort of against their policy, it's not a homeless camp. It's an encampment because we're encamped in protest.
Uh-huh. And how long have you been there?
I've been here 3 weeks.
And has it grown in the last 3 weeks?
No, it has not. If anything, those who are not local have filtered out and more locals have joined.
So how many people would you estimate are in the camp?
About 150.
And how's the community support from groups other than the city and the county?
We have people coming out here multiple times daily, bringing food, clothing, socks, gloves, different churches, several high school groups, parents and their children handing out things that they've managed to get together from their community. But we also have a large contingent, and I'm believing that this is something that was said on the Take Back Santa Cruz website, honking loudly and shouting things from their car daily.
Huh.
At least 10 to 15 times a day. And so I've been interested to see what it says on the Take Back Santa Cruz website if it doesn't say honk your horn in protest.
Mm-hmm. What proportion of the camp is women?
Probably half.
Really?
Yeah, there are a lot of women here, more women proportionally than I've seen at any other one of these.
And how much power do women have there? I mean, you know, Brent Adams has claimed that they're the most aggressive people control the camp, and that
women are primarily the ones in charge around here.
Really?
Unfortunately, we have allowed some things to slip through our fingers or our observation, and I am organizing a group of women here that are going to make sure that the children from the tannery get to school safely without seeing anything they don't need to see, being harassed or in any other way assaulted or offended on their way to school. We will be having a meeting about that and assigning a woman every morning, to make sure that no one is acting appropriately, doing anything inappropriately, or the children are accosted in any way.
Have you had any connection with the tannery people? Talk to them directly.
No, I have not. Well, I do know several people who live at the tannery, and what the official spokesperson is saying is not what they're telling me.
And is the official spokesperson telling you, what are they telling you? Who?
That a child was robbed on the way to junior high, that the children are feeling unsafe, that there have been multiple burglaries going on. But I have to say, how many people have died homeless in this last month? How many ODs have been called for homeless people in this last month? I bet those numbers are down considerably.
Do you have a phone number you can be reached at?
Yes, I do, but I don't know it offhand, but I'll give it to her and she can give it to you.
Okay, and do you have a tent where you're located that you want you can tell Alicia where
Yes. And I've also arranged with the county to have medical kits brought to us and to have three tents designated for 8-hour shifts as medical response here.
Do most people?
When he came and announced that we were almost done, it was hard to get people to continue in the organization of these things because they're thinking it's over, and so they're like trying to prepare for what they're going to do when it's over, rather than trying to maintain this in an organized and controlled way.
Have you had much connection with the day and night storage program that Brent Adams runs?
I have had some connection with Brent Adams, and I have to say that he has not educated himself on the history of Santa Cruz and the homeless. He has not educated himself on what has happened at past encampments, and he has a decidedly and markedly socialist view on all of this.
And what do you mean by a socialist view?
He is still believing that we could somehow have nonprofit organizations running these encampments, that the city could run these encampments, that we should put blackout screens on the fences. Basically, he is perpetrating their belief that we should turn this into a 1938 Auschwitz, a re-education and relocation camp.
What percentage of the folks in the camp are hard drug users?
I would probably say, as I said to the police chief and the mayor and also to the Sentinel, probably about 40 to 50%. But I would also say that 40 to 50% of these people are not from here.
And are most of these
people... They heard about this, that it went through... It was on Google Maps. It was on websites. And I believe a lot of the people that have been here are transient. That's why I said that in the last week or so, there are the same numbers, but the numbers are a different population. Those of us who are homeless, who are activists, who are homeless, who are into our rights, who are veterans, there are 50% of these people here probably right now are veterans.
Mm-hmm.
So 50% are drug addicts, but 50% have also fought and died for this country. So
now,
how does that balance itself out?
How many people would you say have come into the camp in the last week?
Probably at least 50, but 50 have also left. But know that people have been arrested, usually off-site, but pulled over as they were leaving, arrested on the parking lot of Ross, arrested by the tannery, arrested en route.
How many arrests would you estimate there are?
That I know of personally, at least 20 in the last 2 weeks.
And how many other people would you estimate are... you were saying before, Alicia was saying, before you came onto this, we're speaking, by the way, with Mama Shannon, for anybody listening, just tuning in here, at the Ross encampment. There was, I guess Alicia's perspective was, hearing from you and others, that people there want to stay at this encampment and to... I should ask, what kind of a community is developing here at the encampment? If
what kind of community is developing is sort of what's going on country, nation, wide. It seems to be monarchy in the sense that males have been making the decisions and influencing how we behave in the homeless community probably more than any other community in society right now. And the women have felt very empowered here. So the base core of people who are leading the decision making and the behavior, you know, what we feel are the standards of behavior here are female.
How many, you have any regular meetings out at the camp, or is it all sort of individual?
It's been sort of individual, but like I said, the announcement by the police chief sort of derailed us for a moment. And I have told those women who were helping me organize, we need to get back on the track and continue forward with this. And so flyers are going to be going up in the next 24 hours, calling, and we've made a consensus here of the base core people who were here before me, that it was that we're going to call for those people who have been living in Santa Cruz and or homeless in the city of Santa Cruz for 2 years or more to meet together. And we're not going to do it in a majority rule, but we are going to do it in a consensus rule manner. And we are going to bring some things up like security and certain codes of behavior. And we're going to do a majority rule a committee vote.
You know about the upcoming city council retreat at the Harvey West on Tuesday?
No, I do not.
There's a special session of the city council starting at 9 o'clock. I think it's every year, every 2 years, maybe it's when the new councils come in, they have what they call a retreat. And it's not really a retreat away from the public, because they have to do all their activity in public since they're a city council governed by the so-called Brown Act, which means they have to be, you know, they can't do things behind closed doors unless it's supposedly personnel or litigation matters. So they're having this event. There you go. So they have this meeting. It's happening at Harvey West this year, Harvey West Clubhouse. It's at 9 o'clock on Tuesday, and there's actually an opportunity at that time, they say, on their agenda anyway, for public comment. So I don't know if you want to, and I don't know if it's going to be televised or not. It might be, actually. I'm not sure if they're going to, you know, route television out to the, you know, the Harvey West.
Well, I will tell you that I had an interview with Fentanyl.
Yeah.
And he came out here to speak.
Just to make a note here, there was a Tuesday retreat, Harvey West City Council meeting, which did have a public comment period for the public. Started at 9 o'clock in the morning. I didn't go to it. One activist, usually quite a critic of city council behavior on a number of issues, Elise, did go to it, but she apparently was, I don't know if she would say she was charmed by it. I kind of have left a message for her asking her to get back to us with a sort of an update on what happened there. But she did write us an email that said such things as, so Elise's report from the city council was... had phrases like this, emphasis on warmth and building relationships between council members, safe conversations with each other, to get to know each other a little better. They might be able to take more risks with each other and create the basis, platform to be more honest and engage in better conversations. She saw a warm opening among the members, although it was highly facilitated by a professional every step of the way. It was a great and needful beginning, a green, beautiful, sunny day. She was only there for the beginning. She had to leave before the first exercise of the day was completely finished. And there needs to be more difficult conversations. The next step, the conversation between the council members and the city, will have to happen in the city. The city staff is not going to happen without a process like today at the clubhouse, which she apparently supports. We'll get more today being last Tuesday. More polarization. She saw this process start between people, getting to know each other. Goals were clearly stated, and I'm not duplicating them here because I didn't write them down. They were cool. And she goes on at some length describing how she was encouraged by this retreat. I at least writes at great length, and I'm not going to read everything she wrote. But my general impression of retreats, and I didn't get to this one, was that they are a schmoozing, feel-good session for city council members. And the more actually divisions between them that arise, the better, because frequently when they get together, they do the wrong things as a unanimous group and generally ignore basic issues of civil rights, renters' rights, disabled people's rights, workers' rights, and so forth. They are, in fact, better, more strongly influenced by corporate moneyed and business interests, and they tend to act on behalf of those interests. And so the more division you can create of a productive kind, the kind of that Martin Luther King, I understand, talked about, which is creative tension exposing the real problems, the better. You don't want to smooth it over. You want to reveal it. Anyway, that's my reaction, but Elise's was different. And Elise is also very passionate about these issues. Often people who see a road to success through politics or through political action at a legislative level take a different perspective than I do. I have very, very little faith in legislative action, executive action, or government action generally. Although I see, you know, purpose if people can take over the government in some way, assuming they don't Bolshevikize it in the sense of engaged in forced and abusive behavior towards all the citizens on behalf of a small authoritarian minority, then I'm, you know, I'm all for that kind of revolution. But anyway, getting back to the Ross camp and Shannon there, or Shitkicker Shannon, as I once called her, here's some more of that.
To, you know, people in the camp in general.
How long ago?
To do a story about the camp. And someone that I know that I've been talking, well, actually two people that I know that I've been talking to and in front of, maneuvered the reporter in front of my tent so I could overhear what was going on, knowing that I wouldn't be able to sit silent for very long.
Uh-huh.
And they were correct. And I ended up coming out and talking to him. We had a probably 35-40 minute discussion in which he started out by saying that he was interested in everyone's opinion and wanted to talk to everyone. And within 20 minutes of our discussion, he turned it into an interview with me and declined to speak to anyone else and had 35 pictures taken of me and said that he was going to use me as the focus for the article. The article has not yet been published.
Who's the reporter?
I'm hoping...
Reporter was Nick Ibarra, and the article did come out shortly thereafter, and a few other people were quoted. It was probably the first article that goes into, I wouldn't say it goes into great detail, but does at least contain some comments from three or four of the people living in the camp. The article misses the main point, which is the camp is about to be sidelined with no real shelter alternatives, and that the police are already posting notices and scaring people away and frightening people, and that there is a need for some real humane behavior toward the people living there, some alternate campsites immediately, some rather obvious things that don't get into the article. But you can read it in the Sentinel Online, although I think they've closed the comments section, which is too bad. I had lots of responses to the usual chattering of the bigots on that particular comment line.
I'm hoping that it is, and if he quotes me at least once, maybe we can get the message out.
Who's the reporter?
It's the Mail. There's a team that did a story about the encampment.
Is it Nick Ibarra? Is it Nick?
The Mail camp.
Shannon? Is it Nick Ibarra?
I think it might be, but I don't think that's his name.
Is it Nick Ibarra?
An article with a female reporter. That was
Nick Ibarra and Jessica York did the article, one of the most recent articles.
Yeah, and it was in conjunction with her.
Okay, so it could be him. So
it was a younger guy, kind of blonde.
How does the camp feel about support from groups like Food Not Bombs and their proposals about? The question is going to arise: what's going to happen if the a week or two ago that when one of the activists, Nick Whitehead, was out there, he saw police wandering around with submachine guns out there.
Saw what?
Cops with submachine guns.
Yes.
And so, the kind of force that they have, if they move into, to try to evict people starting on March, well, probably ending on March 15th.
Can you hold on a second, please?
Yeah.
Stop.
Now, at this point, there was some kind of conflict in the camp. I think it might have to do with dogs or something. I'm not sure. And so that kind of closed the conversation with Shannon. So what I'm going to conclude this with is a sort of an a look afterward by Alicia Kuhl, who was the person who was interviewing Shannon originally, or at least connected me with her by phone. And here's some of her comments after this interview we had.
She gave me the phone.
Okay, so how many folks are involved other than Shannon right now in this conversation? Anybody else listening or want to talk?
No, there's just been an incident, so the group kind of got broken up.
Okay, and so...
but I hope our information was helpful to you before that happened.
Oh, I think so. And sign in, please, since you also are going to be played on Thursday, it looks like, if I play this. We're talking with...
Okay.
Who are you, madam? What's your name again?
Alicia Cole.
Hey, Alicia. So you've been out there at the camp now for how long as you've been walking around checking things out? I know you live in your RV and you've been concerned about the rights of folks broadly who are poor and people, just generally in Santa Cruz who are outside. How long have you been out there today?
I don't know, Sarah, how long do you think we've been here? Over an hour, right? Hour and a half?
No.
Couple hours? Well, we handed out probably about 100 flyers. I think we've been here maybe 2 hours.
And what kind of flyer have you been handing out?
Letting people know their rights, the Martin versus Boise decision, and that they have a right to find an alternative public space if there's not enough shelter beds when they close the Ross camp.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of reaction, I think you talked about this before, but tell me again, what kind of reaction did you get when you handed out these flyers?
I got the reaction that people here want to stay and fight against the eviction, that there are a lot of people here who cannot go to the shelter, kind of like I thought before, but it turns out that it's true. There are a lot of people here who would not be accommodated in a shelter facility. I was told that Chief Mills told them that people have to make sacrifices, that sometimes he doesn't get to stay with his wife, and that people make sacrifices for survival. I thought that was a bit insensitive for him to suggest that.
Yeah, certainly. What do people intend to do if the deadline comes and there is no change in the policy and they want people to, you know, to move out and are demanding people move or have their property confiscated or destroyed?
They're going to occupy another public space.
So you said that they don't want to move, and are they, so they, do they intend to stay until the last minute? Or I guess you haven't, is there any sense of, it sounds like Shannon has a sense of what she wants to do or what she thinks is going on. Are there many other people like Shannon in the camp who you've spoken to who seem similarly determined?
Yeah, everybody I spoke to was similarly determined.
How many would you say you spoke to?
Oh, gosh, at least 50.
Wow, I got to give you a recording device that you can use when you go around and do it again. How many people would you say have it kind of together enough to be able to plan to do stuff and carry it out? I mean, we noticed, you know, some activists who've come to the Huff meeting have got a lot of good intentions, a couple of camp residents, but, you know, they're, they don't seem to be able to carry out plans that they've put forward. For instance,
I see that being like a still probably an issue. I mean, there are a lot of people who are disabled, a lot of people who you know, do have problems, mm-hmm. and they can't really just move. I mean, there's a, people have a lot of stuff here too, uh-huh. so they can't just put everything in the little cubby at, you know, Brent's storage center and come on down. It's kind of not that easy for them, so. It's best for me. I've learned that I get the best information and the most people sharing with me when I come to them here.
How many tents have you counted, or have you been doing a tent count?
Well, it started to get dark, and I didn't do a full tent count. I will probably come back. But it looks like some of the smaller, like, kind of like lean-to type tents are not so prevalent. To me, it looks like there are larger. It looks to me like there might be a slight, maybe fewer tents, but that they're larger in size.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that was kind of my assessment. It doesn't look like anybody's moved, but it looks like there are a couple bigger tents there now.
Have you been invited in anybody's tent home?
I've been to Desiree's and I've been to Mama Shannon's.
Uh-huh. And have you got operational phone contacts for both those folks that you've actually been able to reach? You think you can reach them at?
I have Desiree's. I will have to get a number for Mama Shannon. I've just left her off camp because of that incident, but I'll be going back. And I do have a recorded statement from Mama Shannon where she describes in detail what the police chief said.
But you haven't yet got her number, I guess, huh?
No, I didn't get her number.
What was the incident that happened, if you want to say?
Just a guy and a girl arguing. I don't know what it was over.
Uh-huh. I gotcha. Any other needs expressed by the camp that you want to mention, anything that they're looking for, particularly that folks can provide or that the city and county should be providing?
Well, I don't know if folks can generally provide it, but they need wood chips. It's really, really muddy and disgusting there. They're keeping it clean as far as personal garbage and things like that, but it's really, really muddy. And I took a couple photographs of the toilets. It's my impression that the toilets aren't getting cleaned. I was told by a couple people, and they were asking me, like, who cleans the toilets here? Because they like to use the porta potties, obviously. Everybody needs a restroom. But it's kind of hard to use them when they haven't been cleaned, and they're disgusting.
Dig it. Did you enter through the Ross parking lot area? How did you get into it, the campground?
The same way I always do. I parked in next to the side of Ross, and I went through the hole in the fence that's on the River Street side.
And you weren't confronted by any security guards or anything like that?
Not this time.
And did you go all the way through the camp to the walkway along the river or not?
Oh, yeah. We went. I do the whole camp when I go there. I went from one side to the other side, back through the middle. I stay and linger a while. I talk to people. I pretty much make rounds and make sure I get a good inventory.
Who was with you in this journey through the campground?
Me and Sarah, my friend Sarah.
Just the two of you. And how were you treated by the campers generally?
Oh, the campers are polite. They're always very respectful. They kind of know us a little bit now because we've been out there several times.
Uh-huh.
But everybody's always welcoming to us. They're willing to talk to us.
And where is, I don't know if we want to say this on, let me take this off air here. Assessment of any changes in the camp that have happened, and we're now on audio again, Alicia, that you've seen today that were different from the previous times. How many times have you come out to the camp now?
Oh, gosh, I don't know now. 6, 7, maybe.
And so, what changes have you seen, if any?
It looks clean. It's a bit muddy. I think people are confused right now, is what I see about, obviously, the future. They can't really get any straight answers about the services. They don't really, they're kind of just sitting and waiting and trying to figure out what to do right now.
What kind of answers are they looking for, and what kind of people are there supposedly to provide those answers?
Well, I've been told that they're waiting to see, what the city is going to offer, but they're not really hopeful, I guess, that there's going to be services for everybody. And like I said, a lot of the things that the city is offering are things that won't even work for everybody anyways. So.
And what information, I know you intend to meet with Justin Cummings tomorrow, along with a couple of other folks. What information, what's the main points that you've learned today that you're going to bring to him, if anything?
For the meeting tomorrow, there are a couple main points. I'd like him to know that, of course, there's all kinds of statistics that I'm going to use to back these things up, but I would like for him to know that in the past, kicking people out and the method that they're trying to use right now in the past has failed, and that's why we don't ever really get any action. I need for him to understand that a lot of people won't be able to use these shelter services, and I'm trying to find out his stance on the upcoming proposals. I'd like to know what he intends on doing about the Ross camp, where he stands with that, and also the upcoming Crone-Glover proposals. What's he going to do for the homeless?
Mm-hmm.
Where he stands on those issues.
Do you intend to go to the retreat at 9 o'clock on Tuesday as well?
Probably.
And how much are these activists paying you to go in there and thwart our poor city?
I'm not paid anything. I'm an independent volunteer for the cause. I live in an RV, and I've been seeing the decline of, the way that people look at these issues, their unwillingness to deal with solutions for the homeless for quite some years now, even before I became a part of this, technically getting thrown into this by my landlord screwing me over, and now I have to live in an RV. So although I'm grateful for my RV, I'm definitely involved in homeless issues and the way that people treat unhoused people now, because I am one of those people. I'm not paid anything. I'm doing this because I want to do it.
Dig it.
And I want to see some change.
It was a facetious question, but I'm glad you answered it. How many individuals did you talk to today, individually?
Individually? Several. I'm not even sure.
A handful, a dozen, 50?
Over 10.
And did you find, are there any people out there you consider to be, stable voices that you can go back to and learn more from and who want to stay in touch with you and so forth? I mean, you mentioned Desiree and Mama Shannon. Anybody else come to mind?
Well, there are several people there, but I think they're just kind of afraid of being, you know, overly active. They don't know how to do it. They're just trying to survive.
Did you see our friend Beach Greg?
I did not see Greg.
I got you.
Anywhere.
Well, yeah. Last I heard, he was at the doctors on duty a few days ago with some sort of an ankle problem. He may be, you know, laid up in a hospital somewhere or something. I don't know.
Maybe, because I was there for a good long time. I didn't see him anywhere.
And Beach Greg, for those who are his friends, showed up yesterday at the Conscious in Action meeting, which we're going to be turning to shortly after this interview is over. So there.
Well, anything you want to add that I haven't asked? I'm sure there's a lot of things, but, you know, we got what we got here.
Right. No, I mean, I'll have to think about it. You kind of got me on the spot because I just came from there and haven't got a chance to really process everything and go over, you know, some of the notes that I took and things like that. So
take it.
I always have more to talk about, but I have to process things.
And, of course, the most important question, have you cleared all this with Bob LaMonica?
And this is sort of an inside joke. Bob is an attender at Huff and Conscience in Action meetings who has a very conservative viewpoint on these issues, and he has gotten into wrangles with other members, differences of opinion, even with myself. Imagine that. But the groups, actually, that these two groups, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and Conscience in Action, do contain a certain swath, I don't know how wide a swath, but a significant swath of different opinion. A lot of people who are conservative still are concerned about the rights and services for homeless people, and they recognize that the city is doing a wretched job with this, although they may have different opinions as to what really needs to be done in terms of, or what are the best systems for dealing with this.
I have not.
Well, then I'm afraid I can't talk to you anymore.
Right. There could be a credibility issue.
I'm making a joke. Bob and Alicia are sort of on different tracks on these issues. Have you ever been over to the Day and Night Stories to talk to Brent Adams?
I have not. But Shannon gave a statement about what she feels, you know, Brent's stance is on things.
And I mean, I understand that. My suggestion is that you don't preclude or foreclose conversations with others. You often said that you said before earlier today that you don't mind talking to people you disagree with. In fact, you can find it productive. But most specifically, your conversations tomorrow with Justin Cummings are best informed if you're going to be trying to deconstruct the staff's claims about shelter and so forth. And I know the expenses spent and the amount of money they're spending and their previous record in terms of which projects got completed, how successful they were, whether they met their deadlines, how many people they served. I'm not saying he's any kind of expert, but he has been keeping an eye on those things, and he may at least have an opinion. So it might be helpful for you to get his opinion on that if he wants to give it to you, if you want to bother to go get it.
Sure, I don't mind.
Yeah, I mean you can.
I don't see that it could hurt.
Yeah, you can sound him out, and see if you agree with Alicia's perspective. Do you ever talk to Brent at any length? Or?
I talked to Brent only a few times. I have not really had a long conversation. We've shared a couple of Facebook messages, and I met him at the laundromat once when he was doing his laundry for the warming center.
Gotcha. Well, just don't mention him too much to Abby, just like you Shelby shouldn't mention Keith too much to Abby, unless you can find some way to heal the great gaps, which is always too bad all these activists can't get together, but they, you know, it's a mixed bag. I appreciate your calling in and, you know, serving as a sort of a conduit for this stuff. Anything else you want to add?
Nope, not at this time, anyways.
Well, thanks, Sarah, for me. Thank you, Sarah, if you're listening.
I will thank Sarah. She just went into the store.
All right, and have a Yeah. All right. I'll talk to you again.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Shot him in the back. Now it's a crime to be black. So don't act surprised when it gets vandalized. Call it what it is, call it what it is, call it what it is. Murder. Good cops, bad cops. White cops, black cops, but God, call it what it is, call it what it is, call it what it is, murder. Trayvon Martin, Ezell Ford, Michael Brown, and so many, many more. Call it what it is, call it what it is, call it what it is. Murder. Governments, they easy. Police.
Ben Harper and the Innocent Criminals, Call It What It Is. It's a video, and you watch it, and you get to see a graffiti artist essentially spelling out all the things that are repeated in the song. Call It What It Is, murder. And that was Ben Harper and the Innocent Criminals, Call It What It Is. Also on video, and hey. You're tuned to Free Radio at the stream freakradio.org. If you want to help us out, we are looking for a transmitter site and or a studio space. We'll pay you for the latter and we'll thank you for the former. A transmitter site would be any tall tree, any backyard with some kind of a height deal, whether you can, you know, we can put up an antenna on a rooftop. And a studio space would be any space which we can rent. And that would be a 10 by 10 space at least, inside or outside, with access to Wi-Fi and electricity. and somewhere a bathroom hiding within a reasonable distance. Give a call to 423-4833. That's my phone number and also a number for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-4833. And let me know if you got some ideas. Also, if you want to be on the air yourself, you want to be part of the Free Radio Collective, we're always interested. Give a call there or go to freakradio.org for more information. So Justin Cummings got back to Conscience in Action, a group that sent him a letter just concerned about his vote, in essence, to seemingly allow the closing of the Ross campground unless it was stopped at the next council meeting on February 12th or February 26th. This was kind of in opposition to Drew Glover's proposal that it not go forward at all until there was really adequate shelter clearly found and available. And so people were concerned that Justin, as with the rent control issue in the previous month, he had taken a different turn. I would say sold out. Sorry, Justin. That's my sense of it. Or at least taken the position that he was scared of a recall and referendum, adopting a more conservative political strategy, if you will, trying to make better relations with other council members in hopes of something good coming up further down the line with a broader community consensus, perhaps. You can use all kinds of different explanations and what I would call excuses, but the essence is renters are suffering now, and they're going to continue to suffer until something is done. And so I think you need to raise the standard and continue it, not back down and hide away. But there are arguments, and some good activists make them, like Cynthia Berger has done, for suggesting that there's enough money and political organization to recall council members who vote for these issues. And that can be a real consideration if you want to retain a so-called liberal or progressive force on the Santa Cruz City Council. In any case, Phil Posner wrote to Justin Cummings asking him about this issue about the campground, and he got this letter back. Justin wrote, "Hello, Rabbi Posner and members of Conscience in Action. First, I would like to apologize for not getting back to you sooner. I've been down at the camp in the past few days. And from what I have seen, it appears that things are moving much slower than was suggested by staff. What we hope to accomplish with providing beds and shelter for homeless people and the reality of getting to the point where we can do so is often very challenging and can take more time than we anticipate. Given the pace at which we are moving, I am not confident that we'll be able to provide enough shelter for our homeless population by the proposed closure date of the Ross Camp, and we'll recommend that we do not close the camp until we have a clear, feasible plan to do so with the least amount of negative impact." Now, that sounds pretty clear and pretty straightforward, but if you look at the language closely, it still leaves a wiggle room for the staff. So the staff can say, well, we'll take this recommendation that they not close the camp until there's a clear, feasible plan to do so with the least amount of negative impact. But we already have such a plan. We presented it last year. We presented it again last council meeting. We're going forward with it. We're sure that it's going to work, at least for those people that it needs to work for. And for the rest of the folks, well, they're on the waiting list, and they're going to be carefully taken care of as soon as we can. In other words, that can be the kind of response to a recommendation that the camp not be closed, as distinguished from a resolution not to close the camp. Anyway, Justin's letter continues. "This week we will be having another homeless 2x2 committee meeting." Now, the 2x2 committee is a committee of the city and county involving some of the heads. I think it's the mayor and one of the board of supervisors and so forth, that supposedly sit down and make these decisions to sort of iron out city and county differences. And I think Justin is a part of that group or is closely connected with it. Anyway, he says, "This week we'll be having another meeting, 2x2 committee meeting. I will be raising these concerns with county supervisors and both county and city staff. I will express to them the concerns of the community and inform them about how the March closure will not be productive and be detrimental to our community. My hope is that we will be able to come to consensus, and if not, we will be able to appropriately address these concerns at the next city council meeting. Thank you all for your hard work and for reaching out to me. Kind regards, Justin Cummings." So that's the letter we got. And frankly, when I first read it, it reassured me. And now as I listen to it, again, it could be my naturally apprehensive, paranoidal, don't trust the authorities, watch out for the traditional history of the staff and their ability to twist the city council around its little finger. Proclivities that I have, I tend to think in those lines. So it worries me. But, you know, city council is coming up. There will be an agenda out presumably later today, already out perhaps by the time the show is aired, so we can see exactly what is on the city council for a vote. And it really, I think the wording is very important. It could give the staff discretion to close the campground, or it could direct them not to close the campground. And that's going to be a key issue, I think. And it's not entirely clear from that letter what Justin's perspective is going to be. I've requested a meeting with him, and so far I've not set one up. I have set up a meeting with Mayor Watkins for the Friday after next to chat about various issues. I usually do a free radio interview with a new mayor, ask a variety of questions, try to get a variety of clear statements from the mayor. We usually don't agree, and there usually are real differences of opinion, but at least we get hopefully some clear understanding of what those differences are. I mean, my positions are, I think, sort of on a separate track from those of politicians, even liberal progressive organizations, many of them, in the community. I mean, I have an independent position, which is, you know, my view. I don't claim to represent homeless people. I don't claim to represent anybody, but what I see as being the best way to go. And, you know, you can take it or leave it. You can take part of it or leave it. You can get rid of it all, whatever. But it's not intended to be some kind of way of easing the city council into the right road or diplomatically encouraging them to respect people's rights because it's the right thing to do. It's really an assertion of, to some extent, anger and indignation that they're not doing with this and have been creating much suffering over the last four decades and will probably continue to do so over the next four decades. And I think the important thing is to really assert what's going on rather than try to please the folks at the top in order to convince them that you're really on their side and not to alienate them. And, you know, and I do poo-poo this. I know some people feel this is their role, and that may well be the case. But that's not my role, and that's not what I do, so I just want to clarify that. You can see what I do by listening to this Conscience in Action meeting, which I was kind of de facto chairing. And again, we were talking about Andy Mills' statements out at the campground and whether the camp was going to be dispersed and whether Justin Cummings was going to stop the campground's closing. And we'll just sort of, that's when the recording to this for this meeting began. I'm going to play some of it now. This was a meeting that's held usually, well, now it's every week at the Sub Rosa Cafe, 11 o'clock at 7:03 Pacific. The public is invited. I mean, it's an open meeting. So if you want to come and be involved in civil rights struggles for homeless civil rights, please do. It's, again, sometimes starts a little earlier, 10:30 in the morning, 11 o'clock at the 7:03 Pacific. We moved it to the Bagelry because we had a problem getting into the Sub Rosa. The normal person tending the Sub Rosa was not available. So here's some of that meeting.
Okay, but the point, the point here is not what Mills says or doesn't say. It is the implication he's giving to people who came out there. At least two people, one of them being Mama Shannon, another being somebody else. I don't remember who. Was that get the fuck out of here? It's posted. It's all been decided. You'll be cleared on the 15th. There are no services for you unless you were here before. We'll give you bus tickets to get the hell out of here if you'd like. And there'll be no second campground allowed. That is the message that I heard from secondary sources. It may not be accurate, and we should be sure that it is.
Robert,
but that's the danger.
Robert,
I would like to put that on the agenda.
Robert, that's my major point.
And that voice is that of Phil Posner, who we heard earlier on the phone, who again wrote a letter to Andy Mills to get his opinion.
I only think that
you should, it would have been nice if you would have written him and said, we got this report, did you say this?
Well, you were writing him, I agree. I mean, I think that's a legitimate concern, I understand that. But the fact of the matter is, my purpose is to put the voices of the people who are out there, not to wait for him 2 weeks down the road to make a response. Sorry.
He responded to me immediately.
Well, I know, because you're the guy who praises Watkins, stands up and forgives her for everything she does, and has an op-ed piece in the Sentinel that contradicts what we're trying to do.
Do you guys feel like while people are still gathered at the Ross camp and have not been
So I'm going to interrupt this Conscious in Action meeting reprise, because on the phone with me is activist Elise. Hi, Elise.
Hi.
And you, you've been, following a lot of these issues very closely for a number of years, but more important, very closely recently. You went to, I read some of your comments from the retreat that you went to, some of your positive comments, which I tried to hold my stomach in as I did, but then that's a difference of opinion between us. But you're rather upset about the city council's general response to this, as I understand it. It's planned to its vote to close the Ross camp, although Cummings now seems to be saying that he will recommend that not be done, given the fact that services are inadequate. Whether a recommendation will stand as a ban to the staff, I don't know. But what's your take on this, and what have you been up to lately, and what should we be... Well, talk to us.
All right, thanks. I appreciate that orientation to the whole matter, Robert. I have been watching City Council on this for years, and, even longer going back, it's been friendly and a part of Huff for years and so forth and so on. So I was hoping for a real change in some of the votes, and I was hoping that I would see that quickly in January, where homeless people were actually protected and that their civil rights were really respected. And the bigotry that we've seen in Santa Cruz in the last several, 10 years with Take Back Santa Cruz, which on one hand is sort of a real grassroots group, but it's certainly been used by Cynthia Matthews and other politicians and city staff behind the scenes. And sometimes I wonder, if they're given a little more shrift or support by the city staff and council members, as I just mentioned, Matthews, than they really deserve. But all of that being more or less water under the bridge in some ways, I was really just hoping for a change of the guard with progressives. I'm glad to hear, as you just mentioned, that Justin is going to maybe reverse his vote. I'm not even sure that's possible, but that he's going to reconsider the position that he took, which was disappointing. So just in terms of all of this, since January, unfortunately, I've seen a continuance by people that I was hoping might be a little more considerate of homeless civil rights, people who are experiencing homeless civil rights and so forth, from, for example, people like Justin, but also Martine Watkins. I was hoping that maybe now that she's mayor and that she's been in there for 2 years, she might be a little bit more prone. And, of course, in that not only did she appear to not, in her own right, really have a more historical sense of the homeless issue in Santa Cruz, but kind of sided with Cynthia Matthews, with how she's been traditionally, and as Justin was a sort of a surprise when he sort of sided with that cabal. And so what we saw was this vote to take apart the Ross camp, but I just want to go back. What we've also seen is a seemingly, it's hard to really say, and I don't want to totally throw the blame in public, but, there was something left off the agenda in January that council members were discussing their calendar, and their calendar is a real serious issue because previous councils have been so slow to act on so many issues that our present council is just completely overwhelmed. And especially on the homeless issue, because with the structural problems we're having with neoliberalism, so many people are becoming homeless or skirt with homelessness. We all know the housing issues here in Santa Cruz. I think I don't need to go into how much precariousness there is out there. People becoming homeless or borderline homeless, maybe they have a roof over their head, but they have to go to Timbuktu to use the bathroom, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we're just hoping that we wouldn't have to fight so hard on this issue. But it turned out, starting with the beginning of the year, at the calendar, it came out at City Council, I think it was January 22nd meeting, that, you know, it looked like Sandy Brown had listed the homeless issue on her agenda for the, I shouldn't use the word, her list for things to be included, to be looked at in the council's workload, and that sort of was just taken out. And the only reason that the homeless issue was brought up at all was because Chris Brown, who's a progressive, mentioned that it was not on any list, etc. And so then we got to play these scheduling games with the new, with Mayor Watkins and the old cabal, Cynthia Matthews, who I say old cabal because she's kind of the leader of it. Donna Myers was there. And things started looking really polarized, as they have been on council for years. Fortunately, Justin recommended this retreat to sort of help with the polarization. And so I won't talk about that right now because I don't want you to get your stomach turned. But what I'm just trying to get at is the homeless issue was kind of being used once again in as a political football. It seemed to have been removed from the January 22nd agenda meeting. So Chris was bringing up, excuse me, it is like the dead of winter, and we've had some of the worst temperatures, rains and gale winds, and we're looking at the next few weeks out, and homeless people are going to be, you know, really freezing and painfully suffering in the cold at night, every night. And we've seen this go on in Santa Cruz now for years, where there's all this pretend mumbo-jumbo, but one camp after another, one homeless solution after another, which is mostly about exorbitant amounts of dollars not reaching the homeless. It was really seriously challenged by some of the activists and pragmatic program managers like Brent Adams and Drew Glover, who's also on City Council, took that up. And when we realized that the homeless issue wasn't going to be on the agenda again until February 12th, and all these people are outside freezing, including people at the Ross camp who are making do and at least trying to help each other muddle through literally in the mud. That's also being called the Heroes Camp, I just heard, but because of some lives that the homeless people saved on the highway one night right there. But point being, it was being turned into a little political football once again, and actual solutions to the homeless were being left off. But the key ingredient, Robert, as you know, is the $10 million that we're getting from the state to address homeless issues.
And that is what I wanted you to discuss, because you said that was the reason you couldn't make the Conscience in Action Huff meeting yesterday, because you instead checked in at this other Give Us the Money meeting.
Exactly, and I'll keep this part really brief and just let you ask questions, but I wanted to give that background because when we started hearing little snippets, little hints that there was going to be a relatively enormous, huge sum of money coming in to help the homeless, I started hearing about that, I think maybe as far back as October. I won't talk more about that, but very little was mentioned, and yet you could see, if you're experienced as I am at looking at City Council, the glaring sort of lack of actual real talk and inclusion around $10 million and how would that be distributed and who are the players. Once again, if you're not literally a city insider, it's going to be really hard for you to know anything. So that kind of flagged me, this glaring silence in the realm of, you know, after having heard about the money, I started to get really interested because this is an area in the homeless issues that I have basically tried to stay out of, like staying away from the plague, because it's like, this is where the rubber meets the road in terms of bureaucracy, in terms of people are willing to do the work, like Brent Adams, who has already done a massive amount of work, as you have. The difference is, he's worked a little bit more on the pragmatic side of, like, how can I, like, keep people people warm and keep them from dying in my warming center, and everybody knows he's done tremendous work there. But for the most part, most of the people who are getting the funds, whereas I won't say they're not being helpful, they are. They're being helpful, but in the face of the era that I came from, where like thousands of people could get help from a mental health system that was funded by the government, what we've seen over the last decades is human services is, you know, turned into this Mickey Mouse little downsized thing where we have a few do-gooders like the Association of Faith Communities who are really trying to help people, or the vets, the veterans, foreign wars are giving their lodge, and people like Brent and some people in human services who have hung on and still trying to do a lot with very, very little, whereas most of the money goes into war, you know, for the Bush family, et cetera, or to keep us all in cars driving to the mall all the time. But, you know, what I'm just trying to get to is I've been trying to keep away from that. But yesterday I heard about this meeting late because I have a friend who's watching it closely. I decided to go to really try to just listen in and observe what these people do. These are the bureaucrats and program providers from different programs who, as I said, are trying to help mostly in some ways, but they're doing so with very little money. So with all this money coming in, I thought, wow, I'm going to go watch this. And I had absolutely no intention of protesting. But my concern is with the tens of thousands of homeless people in California, the hundreds and hundreds of us who may be homeless for a time, who may survive for a time. If we're older, our chances are less likely, et cetera, et cetera. And these vast numbers, because watching and investigating into this area for a long time, I began to notice that no matter how well-meaning these people are, they're only serving a very few hundred number of people, while the vast majority of homeless are getting less and less served. And in fact, the city has this big game of shutting down services, canceling services, kowtowing to take back Santa Cruz, and the politicians like Cynthia Matthews have historically hated the homeless and really could have cared less how many people died as long as the businesses are healthy and happy downtown. And it's like, you know what, I'm sorry, Cynthia's really earned that derogatory remark I just made. And if you knew how adroit she is as a politician, you would, if you followed like I did, you would know that. So I'm sorry to be like that, because the meeting you referred to, the retreat the council just had, I am hopeful. I'm not going to sit.
Let me interrupt you, Elise, because I'm interested more in what happened at this happy hoopy hoppy meeting that did the fun dividing or talking. And also, I have limited time, so you're going to have to kind of wind it up relatively quickly. But how many people were at the meeting?
It's I'll just rough guesstimate. I'll say about 25.
And how much opportunity was there for you and others to speak on the issues?
I feel like on one level, you know, it was a very bureaucratic style meeting. People there, I felt, interestingly enough, you know, they're all representatives of different groups such as the HAP, Homeless
Assistance.
What's it stand for?
I think it's Homeless Assistance Partnership, but I'm not sure.
The Homeless Action Partnership.
There you go.
Countywide Action Team, blah, 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 blah. And that's really who it was. It's the Santa Cruz County Homeless Action Partnership. So there were some city people there. There were a number of people who ran nonprofits there. There were county officials there. There were a few people who have experienced homelessness there. There was Phil Kramer, who runs the Homeless Services Center, et cetera. So just to get to what you asked for, I just wanted to listen in to what they were saying. And at a certain point, when this woman, whose name I forget, something like Elisa, she works for the county, she, you know, and she was just doing her job, but she was talking about things that are happening in terms of the camp, the Heroes Camp, formerly referred to as the Ross Camp. And I'm listening to all this with the numbers, and it's like, you know, that's where I just had to speak up, because I wanted to confront those people suddenly with the issue that I'm interested in, which is we're failing. We're failing tremendous numbers of people. We're not just talking about hundreds. We're talking about not only thousands, but tens of thousands of people. And I could defend that number, but I'm not going to right now because it'll take long. But I've been really investigating and following this, and
So what did you say or do, Elise?
Well, for the one thing I said is, you know, back in 2014 and 2015, that was a watershed moment in Santa Cruz, with, like, the people who were sitting in that room, Don Lane of Smart Solutions, we counted roughly, I think that it's fair to say, 3,500 people, and that's for their underestimate count, okay? Those people came together to really address what was happening to homeless issues in the city, and out of that, there was a grand jury report. It's the final report of the Santa Cruz County Grand Jury, 2014-2015. Final report, it's called Recipe for Failure, Shrinking Budgets, and Increasing Need for Emergency Homeless Shelter. That was 5 years ago. And what these city and county officials like Ryan Coonerty have done since then is, instead of building the homeless shelters, for real, or providing camps that are protected and sanitary, for real, what they have done in a very sneaky fashion, and not saying it nicely, is they've cut meals, cut beds, cut services. They've arrested homeless. They put people on the Homeward Bound program, and they pretend, and that's also a nice word, that they're servicing these people, and what they're really doing is criminalizing them and harming them and absolutely smashing through any semblance of civil rights that these people have, especially the most vulnerable, like how many people I saw in Pacific Avenue who are schizophrenic and weren't really hurting anybody. Maybe they were being a little loud and annoying, maybe. But to watch them get herded into a police car, totally defenseless, without anybody in the area who knew them. I've seen this countless times. People getting shot. People getting, you know, all this stuff because they have mental health issues and nowhere to go. But there's so many people out there, not just people with mental health issues. And so this is what I confronted them with. It's not okay to have groups like the Association for Faith Communities, as well-meaning as they are. That is not a happy situation to have a homeless person who's maybe got mobility issues having to go to different churches every single night just to get shelter and a meal. I mean, sure, it's really kind and heartwarming, and it's a good effort by the faith community, but it is not what we need, and we have to stop pretending. People are dying. This is an abysmal abomination of moral failure to help our citizens, at least to the basic rights to bathrooms, storage, safety. How about not being criminalized because you're poor?
Let me ask you, Elise, did you interrupt a speaker? Did you sort of wedge yourself into a quiet space? Did you stand up and denounce? What happened? Tell me.
Okay, well, I'm looking at the meeting agenda, okay? Welcome and introductions, number one. Number two, point in time count update. I had questions about that. Nice answers. Everybody was all bureaucratic and in fine decorum, including me. I was minding my P's and Q's, Robert. Then we got into number four, heap and cash programs. What they are, how things happen, HAP board and executive committee actions, results of LOI, that's letter of intent for emergency shelter, yada yada, RFP process review, timelines and bugs. And then we got to number five, okay? Emergency shelter planning, okay? The bullets under there, countywide status update, and next, city-county joint action plan to address Gateway Plaza encampment. I think we were on that, but maybe we were on number six, HMIS, building and invoicing for HMIS program freeze. I don't think we've gotten that far. So I think we are on number five, emergency shelter planning, and I've just given you enormous amounts of background here, such as the city has known darn well for years and years and years that we need emergency shelters and planning. And what we've gotten is what I just went through. And so I'm just listening to all this, particularly by this, you know, seemingly nice woman from the county. But she starts talking about, you know, what's happening at the Ross camp. Okay, yeah, it is. Obviously, there are some issues there. But when you force people, you know, as we've seen, into this sliver of land to huddle together to try to survive in the winter, when you're playing games like taking the issue off the agenda at city council in the dead of winter when you're trying to do some things. So they're talking about what they planned. And at that point, I basically decided it was time for me to stop minding my P's and Q's and just start calling it like it was.
And what did you say?
I told you what I just said. I basically called him out. Look, all this is really nice and well-meaning on one level, all these programs and groups that are trying to provide for the homeless, but it's not even doing a drop in the bucket compared to what has been needed for decades. Come on. I mean, and that's what I was talking about in a very nice way, not like I'm doing now, like all steamrolling, but I was like, the gap between, okay, we have the Salvation Army shelter is going to be able to provide for 50 people over here. Let's leave that up to do another 40 over there. And combined, that's 90. And then I go, okay, for sure. That's 90 people who are going to be blessedly grateful. They're not going to die outside in the cold, that they're going to have shelter. But on the other hand, it's not even clear that's going to go forward. It's not, these people, these groups are not equipped. You know, in fact, she started talking about at one shelter that's up in Watsonville, they weren't going to be able to provide for as many people because the fire marshal came in and said, you know, hey, we can't have this many people here in the building. My point is, and what I really started talking to them about was, we have a slow genocide, a very glaring human rights issue about people being able to survive instead of being criminalized, and instead of being talked down for anything under the sun that you might decide they should be tarnished or spoken about in a deleterious way, which is, of course, what bigots do all the time. How about we actually take all this money and interest and really build shelters, or as Drew tried to put on the agenda for the 12th of February, which was also not agendized, transitional encampments. And Brent Adams is the one who did a tremendous amount of research on that. Even Paul Lee thinks maybe we could do a transitional encampment up in the Poconet.
And Elise, what was the response of the crowd to what you said?
Actually, I was really surprised at how copacetic they were. It was as if, in fact, a lot of the people who were present there, it was as if they almost welcomed what I said. I was allowed to go on for quite some time. No, the only person who shut me down after a while was Elisa, the county representative, and she, you know, that's her job type of thing. As a bureaucrat, she's kind of got to do that, but you know, Serge Kago was there. He was in support. Linda Lemaster was there. She was tremendously in support. And you would have thought, by all the nods and generally, you know, nobody really got upset and tried to obstruct me.
Now, were you lifted on people's shoulders and carried out with huzzas?
No. I was actually given so much leeway to speak. I also really held their feet to the fire about the total lack of transparency, that more or less, the total lack of involvement of more homeless people. Serge gave me a lot of support there. Their transparency could be worse, I guess, but they had, for example, large amounts of discussion over whether some of the people who are going for the funding, for example, some of the nonprofit people, could also be the same people who reviewed the applications, and how well that could be done if we very precisely made sure that they didn't review the applications for the programs and money that they would be going for. I mean, this kind of insider thing is the kind of thing you're seeing with deep privatization, you might say, a sort of corporatism that's so far gone and so far right that it's really bordering on fascism, especially when you have the kind of failures that the city has continually made sure that they have happened. Now,
let me ask you this, Elise. What you may not know, because I don't know if you stayed through the whole meeting, but what was the ultimate outcome? What got delegated to who? Who's going to get the boodle?
Well, we won't know until Friday. And it's just, I think, the first million that's up for disbursement at this point for emergency shelter planning. But, of course, the kind of programs that are going to benefit are programs like the Association of Faith Communities shelter, which they have a new term for that. I forget. Faith Community Shelter, maybe. I forget. they're going to certainly be increasing the numbers of people that they're helping. The Salvation Army is going to be a winner in the lottery. Even though they don't have their shelter, as I understand it, quite fully ready for occupation yet. Another one is the people who are doing the shelter at the VFW. Who is that?
7th Army. I'm not sure. Maybe they're thinking of Adventists, but I think not. I think it's a veterans group, I think.
So those are, for example, three of the groups. They're all private groups. They're not, and I have that part wrong. But what I'm just trying to say here is, you know, if the city had just sort of bitten the bullet, let's say 5 years ago, for example, which after 20 years of kicking around the homeless issue, and they got that, like I'm talking about, that watershed moment when so many of these excellent workers in the social service system and in the city and county and Don Lane Smart Solutions and you and the Huff and Association of Faith Abuse really went to great pains to really count in a kind of a unique way as many homeless as they could. Of course, they're never going to count everybody by any stretch. But they came up with 3,500 homeless, 70% of whom grew up in Santa Cruz. If they had built, you know, in the final report of the civil grand jury stating just how abysmal, for example, the armory winter shelter was, really coming to terms with the facts and then printing the outcome summary, which was what we needed more emergency homeless shelters, and then to watch what the city did instead, which is a really sinister fascist beefing up of the rangers of this new police force to hate on homeless in the park, kicking them, pushing them along, if not jailing them, and et cetera, which Cynthia Matthews was a big supporter of. How many hundreds of thousands of dollars are going into the Ranger program, for example, just to push homeless around or criminalize or arrest them or disappear them, put them on buses, the Homeward Bound program? So I'm saying, if they had bit the bullet back then, and let's say decided we're going to get serious in the city of Santa Cruz with like 500 beds, let's do this 300 beds. 250 beds.
Let me interrupt you again. Actually, I'm probably going to cut you off, unlike the other folks there, because we only have about 2 minutes left for this broadcast.
Okay.
But, you know, what I would say is that, you know, when they pulled this smart solutions shit and the housing first nonsense, which Don Lane led the charge on, by the way. I don't know why you're speaking positively about him. But, you know, I mean, we probably disagree on our assessment of him. But, you know, there was this... Sorry, say again.
Political.
I don't know, but I know that, you know, it's been an endless runaround, as I think I completely agree with you, but there's never been a chance that they were going to do this without massive pressure from below. These organizations, you know, the Association of Faith Communities was talking about 20 people that they're serving in 2012, and in 2019, they're still serving 20 people. Okay, they can go up to 40 people. And when you raise that issue, as you may remember, we did, when Brent Adams had his Coalition on Homelessness discussion, you know, the head of the program had a shit fit. You know,
Can I just say, for example, there are jobs that people are getting. I know at least one person who's getting a job with the money. And
that's nice. That's nice. So what?
It used to be before Reagan, okay, that when these jobs would become available through a government program, they would have to be posted as a matter of course so that the public, for example, could apply for them. Where in this Mickey Mouse privatized, churchy, Salvation Army, veterans, yada, 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 instead of a healthy, robust social service system, nobody even knows how to get these jobs.
You know,
one of those jobs.
I mean, I got to tell you, I don't know how robust it was even in the Carter era. I mean, it certainly was better in some respects than now. But I think if you would have talked to activists then, you wouldn't have found a lot of positive commentary about it. But, let me leave it there and give you the last word. You got 30 seconds. Go for it, kid.
Okay, I just want to say, what I'm trying to do in some sense, Robert, when I use terms like the pre-Reagan era, what I'm really trying to flag is, what would it look like to have a social service system that was really supported by our tax dollars,
mm-hmm.
instead of a fake system that's totally fake?
I hear you.
And right now what we're talking about, which would be better, that Drew's talking about, that Brent's talking about, that Pauline's talking about, that I'm interested in, is, can we get a couple of transitional encampments where at least people shelters.
We're going to be talking more about that. Are anything coming up in the next week that, or next few days you want to mention?
So I just want you to know that I did leave, and I just want to mention that it went pretty well on the whole. I really didn't intend to protest, but I probably should have known that I would end up doing that. No, I didn't get arrested. But the point being exactly what you're saying.
Anything in the next... Wait, Elise. If you can't answer this question, anything coming up in the next few days?
And I do, but I think we want to support the Ross Camp.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to support people to kind of be apprised of opportunities that we might have to organize and to help people file for their... possibly file lawsuits, as you just mentioned.
And you're, of course, invited to come to that workshop next Wednesday at 2 o'clock at the Ross Camp.
There we go. And also just, like, for example, Democratic Socialists of America.
When is their next meeting? Do you know
Saturday mornings, and they're providing.
What time do you know they meet, and where do they meet?
I think it's 10 o'clock. I think there's a group that meets at Java Junction, but you can meet right over at the camp. And we're going to be, my understanding, and I'm hoping I'm getting this correctly, we want to talk to residents, and we want to also give out some supplies that we can give out, as the DSA has been doing. I've just been a participant sometimes, so I'm not one of those.
I've read good things about them and what they've been doing. Let me say goodbye, thank you, and let you know that you're likely to be called again, in spite of a 5 minutes that turned into a 25-minute conversation.
Oh, my gosh.
You take care, babe.
Bye-bye.
Okay. And that was Elise, who has been around for, as they say, quite a while. I'm going to play a little bit more of this teaser of the Conscience in Action meeting, which you're going to hear much more of, I think, on Sunday. But I think you'll get some idea of the direction we're going in and perhaps want to tune in when you listen to this little bit now.
You know Kevin?
Yeah. Kevin.
So you got that on the agenda?
Alicia, you know Kevin?
No.
What? I didn't think so.
Okay, so the agenda is going to be what? Documentation
Kevin
for what?
Was one of the class freedom sleepers.
You need a lawyer for a client. You want to do a class action lawsuit?
Pardon me?
He's a lawyer. Do you want to do a class action lawsuit? Otherwise, I'll put it on the agenda. All right, class action lawsuit.
I know Mama Shannon and Desiree do.
Well, they do, but they have no legal training and they have no legal background.
Right.
So, you know. But, you know, you need plaintiffs, and then you need an attorney, and you need money, and you need time. Anyway, so that's on the agenda. So the main issue is we have a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday, which there's some confusion about what's going to be on the agenda. Drew said he will not know until later today what's on the agenda, or maybe tomorrow. So that's, I mean, they may get news. They do the agenda today on Wednesday for next Tuesday.
How could they not put this issue on the agenda?
Well, the question is whether, as Brent says, it's going to be a secondary issue that will be preempted by the city manager's stuff, which I don't think is accurate, or whether it's going to go up and what's going to be passed, and also how much he doesn't think Cummings is going to vote for a state of emergency. I mean, I don't know.
I'm meeting with him tomorrow at 9:15. So I'm in an emergency.
Kevin, there's room right here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And I will bring the state of emergency.
This is Keith McHenry.
So
you're meeting with him tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah. I got the feeling in our meeting that he was going to go.
Alicia, cool.
Okay, and Kevin, you had your hand raised. What do you want to say?
Yeah, I forgot already. I can't do
and we have to remember that Brent Adams is looking at $5,000 to $30,000, and he needs to be cordial to Martine Bernal so he gets the money. Which we want him to have.
I mean, there's an element of that.
Yeah. Well, he spends it on what he
has. So what's your point, Kevin? What do you want to say?
It also depends on the bandwidth of the city staff to get done what they hope to get done in time for the next meeting.
That's true. Partially true, yeah.
So I talked to the bandwidth issue to Drew yesterday or the day before and suggested that there be a citizen committee that goes out and does what they say they don't have the ability to do because they don't have the time and get rid of that situation. He said he was actually in Susie O'Hara's office when she was signing up interns to fill that gap.
What gap?
The fact that, you know, their excuses, they don't have enough bandwidth to do all this stuff, right?
Right.
And she's opposing to getting a, trying to get together interns to actually go out and find locations.
So did we lose the interns that Drew had working?
No, he's also got his. I met with his intern. Yet one of them yesterday.
He has a lot of interns.
They're like really into it.
Great.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, he has a ton of interns.
So, they've been a big help.
You know, Conscience in Action is primarily concerned with doing stuff independently of the city council.
Correct.
And so I think I'm glad people are doing all these initiatives, whether it's Bill writing stuff I don't agree with, or you meeting with people, or whatever. You know, I mean, that's important. What we want to do is deal with actual homeless situations that have come up that they're ignoring,
right,
and that we have to address. Now, this RV situation apparently is. I want that on the agenda because Alicia, you called me this morning and you said that Havy came by in the wee hours or a little bit later and put a notice on your car. I got a thing from Julie Scholl. She got a ticket for.
And we're going to be getting back to the RV issue at this meeting and, in fact, in real life on Sunday. In the meantime, get in touch by phone if you want to leave a message as to what's happening outside, if you have some concerns or questions about what you're hearing on the air, if you want to be involved in any of these activities, 423-4833. 423-4833. That's been Bathrobe Spears Broadsides for today, the 21st. Talk to you again on Sunday.
That our dear and beloved Uncle Dennis has passed away, surrounded by the love of his family. You may remember him for his truly great show, From the Cream to the Dregs, or for the so much needed echo news about the state of our planet, like Earth First Update. Uncle Dennis was one of the founders of Free Radio Santa Cruz. He dedicated much of his life to its survival, keeping the ship going despite all the difficulties, from the recovery after the 2004 raid and the consequent confiscation of gear, to the frequent site change for transmitter and antenna. We largely owe to Uncle Dennis the nearly uninterrupted broadcast for these couple decades. We all will remember him as a true guide for our collective and a wonderful, generous companion of many adventures. He made many years of Free Radio Santa Cruz possible, and we are so grateful for his dedication and so saddened by his passing. Rest in peace, dear Uncle Dennis, great show host, friend, leader, one amazing pirate of the air. We'll be right back.